Hello, and welcome to another episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Rethink Possible explores pockets of awesomeness in school districts as told by school district leaders. I'm Bob McDowell, your host. Let's dig in.
Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Corey McIntyre, who is the superintendent for Anoka Hennepin Schools. Thanks, Corey, for being with me today.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Absolutely. We're excited today. Corey's here talking about implementing structural organizational change. And while many of us are used to hearing about organizational change, we've asked Corey to come in and talk about what he means by structural organizational change and how you implement that. So can we start there, Corey? What does that mean? What's structural organizational change?
Well, I think of it as how are you designed to get the results you aspired to get, right? How are you positioning people? Since we're in school districts, we're 80% people, our budgets are 80% people at least. We're a people business. How are we positioning our people to have the maximum influence and impact towards the results we aspire to? And in today's reality, how do we do that better with likely less resources? That's how I simply think of it.
So thinking of it in those terms, when you in your organization start to implement that structural organizational change, what are the things you're thinking about to start that process? What's the information you're taking in to suggest to you, I think I got to really start looking at the structural organization?
Yeah, I think a lot of districts were in the same boat. We were all the way back to the day after we settled our teacher contract. We have 18 employee groups, but the teacher group is our biggest, like everyone else. And then for us, at least, after we settled that, knowing that we needed to do as best we could to pay our teachers to make sure we're retaining and recruiting and competitive, right, in a tight market for teachers. But the minute that we settled that contract and we knew we had a deficit, I started thinking about if we're going to need to make organizational change and budget reductions, it's going to have to include the central office. It's going to have to include senior leadership. It'd just be really tone deaf to not lead first at the leadership, at the senior level, modeling change, and for the rest of the organization to see we're going to have to do our business differently within the resources we have. And then you start building out a process. You start thinking about, all right, how are we going to get there? You create a timeline, knowing when the changes need to be made. And for us, we knew in November our overall budget reductions decision had to happen to be ahead of our staffing process that really starts in full tilt in January, right after winter break, but knowing that December is all the planning for that process. And it's such a tight window to get it all done. So you have, you know, a timeline in mind. And then, you know, at a high level, and I could talk more about all these things, but then, you know, I began to map out, you know, you got to spend time researching. What model makes the most sense for us at this point in time? I spent a lot of time really talking and listening to stakeholders internally and externally. So I started planting those seeds with our senior leadership team, our district leadership team, and even our principals, that we're all going to have to work with a smaller team and getting them used to that idea that it's coming. And so that's that transparency side of how do you communicate before, during, and after the change is made. I researched a number of districts outside of Minnesota that were like us as far as size and demographics, reached out and talked to those superintendents, talked with other superintendents that run large, medium, and small districts here in Minnesota, kind of trying to pick, you know, I honestly just asked them and I really talked to those who had been through some change, structural change in their district, and they do again and what would they do differently? Then I took time to get input from my current leadership team, and that includes cabinet, district leaders, building leaders, and many, many conversations with the school board over time as this evolved. And then also just that whole umbrella of communications and how you tell people where you're at in the process and who you tell at what time and how you tell them.
The scale, however, is that you're making a gigantic reduction when you say administrative reduction, which is why I think this type of a discussion is applicable even down to some of our smallest districts, just because what you're doing is truly to scale. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how many positions this is impacting, and so people understand I'm going from this down to this. And so our listeners understand that this definitely is a topic that can resonate regardless of the size of your district.
And I like how you said that, Bob. So the impact may feel just as being felt on the same level, whether you're a large or a small district, right? It's all relative, but it still, in a lot of ways, feels just as hard across the districts in the state. For us, we have, Southern Okanagan have been with 37,000 students. We have 8,000 employees, and about 500 of those are, just slightly over 500, are at the central office in roles that are generally at the central office and not out in the buildings, even though home base might be a central office. So we made a $5 million reduction right away last spring. That was about 50 positions. And then we have another $9 million cut that the board just approved Monday night for another 250 positions. So over 300 positions are affected either directly or indirectly, either through a reduction or a realignment. And with all that, and I think people can appreciate with the whole idea of trying to protect our school sites as much as we can, knowing there's a tipping point. Some of this, if you go too deep, it does end up pushing work back out to the schools, right? So that's the balance. But that's kind of the scope for us. We had a $26 million shortfall, so we did $14 million of that $26 centrally to, again, try to minimize the impact on the sites. And since we didn't, the rest of that $26 million for now was dealt with using some fund balance. So we went from 10% to 8% fund balance to bridge that, and we'll likely be reviewing where we're at a year from now.
The reason this is a big deal is even though your district is in reference to Minnesota, gigantic, and you have also impacted your direct leadership team. So one thing that I'm interested if you're able to talk about is when you're making a significant change like this, and it's going to also impact your direct leadership team as the superintendent, how do you go about that change readiness with when you're going to live in a situation where you still have to get through the rest of this school year? You still have important things happening for kids and decisions that need to be made. What does that look like to support people as you work through these difficult changes?
Well, I'm really glad you asked this because I think this is the heart of the matter. We're going to spend a lot of time talking on the technical changes, the number of jobs or the types of jobs from the senior leadership level down through the teachers that have rights on teacher contracts that might be on special assignment and everything in between. But the leadership challenge here is really how you show up, how you show up and how you lead through such a significant change. And for us, this is probably at least 30 years of, you know, the current structure we've had has been in place for at least three decades, probably closer to four. So it's been tradition. It's been, you know, it's very established traditional model that people know and understand and honestly have been supportive of and have lots of pride in, right? So I've learned a few things through this, and you're always humbled by it, and you're always learning on how to do it better. there's a few things that I've shared with our team and teams of people. My goal's always been to be very transparent, very direct. I call it KDR. We're going to be kind, direct, and respectful. And to be direct is kind. So have provide information is kind. And really with the spirit of being as open and honest as you can at the right points in time, right? And for the superintendents listening, you know, there's no job like this one, right? There's nothing like it. The kind of toll it can take on you emotionally and physically because of the different pressure points are very unique. So throughout, I established what we called trust accelerators. So from the beginning of the process, I kept coming back to what we identified together as our trust accelerators. And that was to be kind, direct, respectful. We're going to assume positive intent, number two. Number three, through this process, we're going to deliver the mail to the right address. Meaning when we got to have hard conversations, I'm going to go to the person that it influences the most instead of talking to someone else about something that impacts someone else. And then in the end, we're going to have to try to do our best to support team decisions. That's number four. So I've kept those four principles at the heart of our change process from the beginning. And I think it gave us some grounding. And I like the concepts of trust accelerators versus these are our agreements. This has a different mindset to it. And then throughout that, there's also some realities that we have to come to terms with, and especially hard for those who have been in our system for a long time. We're not entitled to anything. The jobs we all hold, it can change. And so there's realities that this, especially as superintendents, we're not entitled to anything, right? We, in reality, all just kind of renting the seat for our period of time till it's up. And then finally, to take responsibility for things means, at least I've tried to model, I'm going to show up as being as trustworthy as I can be without expecting a lot of trust back. I can only control how I show up and that I'm going to be as trustworthy as I can be because I just can't control how people are going to receive information. So I've really centered on those principles. And every time we have a team meeting or I'm in front of our team of principals, which ends up being about 100 people in the room, I try to ground us with those concepts to help guide us through how we're going to show up in these moments and how you lead through a challenging time. And if you frame it up in a way like that and get the mindset in the right space, it buffers the impact of a huge structural change.
I think that's very helpful because it really fits with a framework that I like to share with people and do, which really is I think as leaders, particularly when we're functioning as the CEO of a school district, is this balance between communication, facilitation, and logistics. And, you know, what you just described is in a situation of structural organizational change. That is probably not something that as the superintendent that you can delegate to somebody else. You actually have to be the person facilitating those conversations and communicating internally and externally, and you've talked about that with your board, you've talked about that internally with your leadership team and that idea of showing up. And so I think that's a great place for us to start, have started with this conversation. If we then shift to the third piece of that triangle, the logistics or the chronology of events, how could you walk us through, like, what did you have to do when? How does that logistics play into really making the shift and the timeline that goes around it?
Yeah, I'll maybe circle back to some of those high-level things I mentioned that early on. Last February, just had the realization this is going to happen. I'm going to land this by November, right? So putting that out there as I'm communicating with the different levels of the organization, whether it's cabinet, our larger leadership team, the staff at the central office, all staff, and even our community, like beginning to have a real clear plan on how to communicate that out. And that's something we should probably come back to a few times throughout the process. Those were the groups. I was always thinking about who do I communicate when and how, right? When did they have to hear it in person? And when can I use an email? When does that go through our communications team? You know, really being strategic about how and who and where we communicate. And before I lose track of it too, you know, Bob, the last week, the previous Friday, Monday, and Tuesday, I literally had 43 individual conversations about impact to those people's roles in the organization. And I just felt it was super important that they hear that from me, because ultimately as superintendent, it's my plan. Someone asked me in a principal's meeting, you know, whose plan is this? Who built it? How did we get here? And as we all know, the board has one employee. So ultimately that's me. Now we, you know, I have included a lot of perspectives and voices in the process, but I have to own it. And so it's mine in the end. And backing up through time, you know, doing my own homework ahead of time on what, and for us as the biggest district in the state, I really need to look at what other big districts do. I've talked to most of the top 10 size districts here in Minnesota, but I also reached out and got lots of information from different parts of the country that have 30 to 50,000 students, just to look at their organizational charts and talking with some of them about what about that works and what about that doesn't. And then probably the hardest part is as I'm deciding how to change my cabinet team, especially getting some input from them is tricky when you're saying to them something's going to change. And of course they're wondering, what does that mean? There did come a point where I had all that input I could get, and then it was my work to do. Like the end plan I had to develop in the end kind of in a confidential way, because otherwise too much information is leaking out and people just have a hard time keeping it to themselves. It's just hard, right? So the last few weeks, that was in the end, I had to just make some hard decisions based on that input. And then probably the most important thing was, as I was going through this process, regularly, continually talking with board members. I would meet, we have a 6-member board, so I would meet with 2 of them at a time and give them a status update on where I'm at in this process. From the research phase to the input to the, I think at one point I had 4 different options. I shared with them, here are the 4 options I'm working on, and I will get that down to 1. And then before communicating to employees that might be impacted by it, sharing with the board members, here's where I'm landing. And with 2 things in mind, does it hit the financial target that we have set? And do you have support of the plan, knowing that once it gets rolled out, they're going to get pressure from those impacted by it? So I needed to know that I had my back on this.
That, what you just led with, or just finished with, is a perfect segue into usually what I ask in the final question when I'm doing these podcasts, which is, if there's a superintendent that finds themselves in a position, regardless of size, to make structural organizational changes, what are the 1, 2, or 3 things that you would provide as advice or things to start with as they seriously consider going down this path?
Well, if I just boil it down, I think it's ultimately not about the technical change. It's how you treat people through it. What I heard from others that have been through it, and what I really tried to center on, is just back to what I said earlier, how I show up and how I take the time and care with people. I think it's being authentic, being willing to be vulnerable with them, to admit this is hard. They don't necessarily want to hear it's hard on me because this is affecting them. But I think acknowledging and being really clear and transparent about why we got here, doing my best to explain why I chose the structure that I chose, why I chose to realign positions the way I did. This past week, the past few days, especially now that the board, you know, approved the plan on Monday, these last couple of days was me circling back and checking back in with people. I can't maybe take the sting away, but I can at least show up and check in and show that I care about them. And maybe that's just how you kind of look yourself in the mirror, like, hey, am I treating people with respect? Am I being kind and being direct? And as a superintendent or any leader of organization, how do you love your people without it being expected to be loved back? Right? And or how do you care for them without being having the expectation of being cared for back? The human side of this, Bob, is I think where I'm landing. That is the big learning for me. You can come up with technical changes, but how you roll that out and how you show up to do it probably is more important to me.
Well, Corey, we're out of time for today. I want to thank you so much for being here with me, talking about how you're implementing structural organizational change in the Anoka Hennepin School District.
Thanks for the opportunity to come on and just talk a little bit about it. In the end, you know, I felt the responsibility that I had to, we had some hard realities that we just had to deliver. So it's just a matter of maybe how you lead through it. And like I said, how you show up. So I'm hopeful that this was really helpful to some who are probably living the same challenge I am. I know many of our colleagues in Minnesota are. So
thank you for listening to this episode of Rethink Possible with Bob McDowell, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.